Maximum Credible Accident by John Howlett, with Hugh Dixon as Gordon Aylin and Patricia Gallimore as Kate. Part 4, Murphy's Law.
"700 hours, Wednesday morning. As the day shift takes over at Segre, control rods are eased out of the fuel core another few millimeters, raising reactor output to 380 megawatts. The fragment of fractured ceramic fracturing again as the reactor approaches its new level of heat and power. This time, the sound sensor alarm triggers a triple signal, but in the absence of other indications, the sound alarm no longer seems to warn of danger. Even inside the reactor dome itself, there is no obvious sign of anything seriously wrong.
Enzo?
Gianni.
Why are you in here?
Why are you in here?
I was going to check electrical circuits.
I've been checking them. And if you read the maintenance book, you'd see they've been checked 20 times already this week.
Wishful thinking, I suppose.
You seen this?
You're not meant to take graph sheets out of control.
It's a photocopy. 7:21 this morning. One triple echo on sound sensor number 2. Here, put it in your pocket. Might burn a hole in it. Well, I'll leave you to your secret mission.
Secret mission?
You've come in here to pull the sound sensors off the alarm circuit.
How the hell did you know?
Stands to reason. The French gurus wouldn't want the bells ringing during their party today.
Look, the sound sensors under the core have been reclassified as inessential instrumentation.
Have we been reclassified as expendable?
You're being a little unreasonable.
Look, we live here, Gianni. I have a family 10 miles down the road, downwind more often than not. I can't afford anything to go wrong here. Ever.
If a meteor collided with the Earth, the point of impact would inevitably be a British coal field.
What's happened, Ashley?
South Yorkshire coal field. A line of coal wagons derailed, smashed into a pump house. Buried 9 surface workers.
And our minister has flown up there to visit the scene without so much as a by your leave. I believe the miners do it on purpose. It's a conspiracy to keep their statistics at the top of the league table so they don't lose clout with the public. They'll have a 40% wage claim to lay on the table next month.
Numerically, agriculture kills more people than coal mines.
Farm workers are not in the habit of killing themselves by the half dozen at a time. If I could wave a wand, we'd already have built 100 nuclear power stations and closed every damn coal mine in the country, remembering, as a bonus, that workers in nuclear power stations would, for safety reasons, be denied the right to strike. Gordon, we are to see the Foreign Secretary at the House at midday. Are you otherwise complete for this brief you're meant to be writing?
I have a session with the Nuclear Installations Inspectorate. I need their provisional safety clearance on the fast breeder blueprint for purposes of budgeting.
Isn't that Kate's department?
If she wasn't on an aeroplane halfway to Rome, yes.
Donaghy, over here.
How long have you been hiding in that doorway?
Since 8 o'clock this morning.
You could have waited up in the office. They'd have told you I was going to be late.
My request is a little unorthodox. Not for the ears of the Friends of the Earth.
Does that mean Salter sent you?
I'm on my way to Italy. I need some help.
And?
You and Salter came up with that Red Brigade story out there. He didn't find that lying on a beach in the sun.
From what I remember, Salter spent most of his time lying on a beach.
He gave me a name. A girl.
Anna.
I want to know how I contact her.
You're crazy.
She's a terrorist, I know.
They don't play games out there, Henshaw. Fool around with them, you're likely to end up in a plastic sack.
My plane leaves in 2 hours, Donaghy. And Ridgway is already 3 hours ahead of me.
There you have it, Kate. One fast breeder in gleaming virginity.
Yes. Looks almost unreal. After the cypress trees and olives and vineyards and a landscape like something out of a Renaissance painting. Then this vast open space and these white buildings and a huge dome and 10-foot wire fences by the edge of the sea. Makes you shiver for a moment.
The Foreign Secretary will see you now, Mr. Raylan.
Thank you. Do sit down. I was saying to your permanent secretary it would stand us in very good stead with the Americans if we could help bail out their fast breeder program. I wanted to hear from you how much danger you thought there might be of the Americans and French getting together.
The French have a head start on us all, Foreign Secretary, which they're very reluctant to surrender. But I'm sure if it became necessary, both Americans and French could swallow enough pride to make partnership work.
Which would leave us where?
Out in the cold.
Unless we wanted to throw our pennies into the same hat.
I don't think we'd feel particularly enthusiastic about that, nor the French.
In the best of all possible worlds, Foreign Secretary, a multinational consortium would be the ideal solution, one gigantic fast breeder cake, and split the market according to a ratio of investment. In that way, we'd keep plutonium and proliferation policed by a single worldwide authority.
Utopian nonsense.
Helen, it's me.
Hello, love. You don't usually brighten my afternoon.
I'm only an hour away from you.
I know. You're at that pit. I saw you on the lunchtime news. Is it very awful?
There's still two beggars trapped in all that mess, joking away like it was their job to keep us cheerful. One of them's going to lose both legs, and the other one will be dead before we get him out.
Where are you talking from?
Well, I'm sitting in a foreman's hut with a mug of tea. It's like Passchendaele outside. Rescue workers up to their knees in mud. This place should have been closed down 50 years ago.
So close it down.
Well, then what would I do with the miners if I did? Can you imagine dressing them up in white coats and gloves and sticking them in some plastics factory to make lavatory seats? I mean, how do you make decisions like that? You know, Helen, for two pins and a doctor's surgery, I'd give it all up.
You'd have to go back to school if you did. I haven't been a GP for 10 years.
How are the kids?
I'll be back on the school bus any minute. Then tea, then choir practice. Then Matt calling in when he's finished surgery for a bit of a gossip. Why don't you come home tonight?
Oh, not a hope. I missed a cabinet meeting today. Boadicea was not pleased.
How's the fast breeder?
Pursuing me.
The superstructures are made up of the refueling chambers, the primary pump access shaft, and the control rod mechanisms.
How far down is the reactor itself?
It's under your feet. Under 2 meters of concrete and 1 meter of steel.
You can almost feel the heat.
Yes.
Don't you find this all a perfect miracle, Kate? Lumps of metal dug out of the earth and dancing to our tune.
With a little help from computers and God knows what.
One day we won't even need computers. One day, we're going to learn to operate as efficiently as the sun.
April the 25th, 1953, the Yucca Flats in the USA. Nuclear test, codenamed Simon, explodes 100 meters above ground. The resulting cloud of radioactive dust rises to 10,000 meters and, after drifting with the wind, causes radioactive rain to fall over the townships of Troy and Albany. The official report of the incident is classified and kept secret. After all, the general public has no way of distinguishing between radioactive rainfall and normal rainfall.
I can see you, Gordon Aylan. A fleeting reflection in a dirty railway carriage window against the South London sunset. Prematurely grey. Silver, the kind of ones would say. A stone too heavy. And at this particular moment, cramped into the corner of a crowded commuter compartment. Unable or unwilling to pay the first-class excess that would transfer you from the five-a-side company of insurance clerks and secretaries to the three-a-side luxury of stockbrokers and publicity consultants. That's right. Peer out at the red sun over Battersea.
a last glimpse before the London skyline disappears.
December the 4th, 1957. The 4:56 p.m. out of Cannon Street in thick fog. Driver and fireman nursing the engine since they've not had time to take on water during their turnaround and have to conserve their supply until the first scheduled stop at Seven Oaks. Between New Cross and St. John's Lewisham, they pass a double and a single yellow signal without apparent reduction of speed. At St. John's, they pass a red stop signal and immediately reduce power and apply brakes. Too late. Under the Nunhead flyover, they run into the back of the train in front, the 5:18 p.m. from Charing Cross to Hayes. Average bad, but credible accident. Or what should have been. Instead, the heavy locomotive jumps the rails and demolishes the brick pier of the flyover. The flyover collapses onto the front carriages of the 4:56. Maximum, incredible accident. Murphy's Law, human error, or act of God?
An act of God that you survived. Young Gordon Aylan, 27 years old, complete with briefcase and umbrella, and sitting just 3.5 feet behind the point where the flyover came crashing down. 90 people were killed that night. And no one in front of you survived. They disappeared. The whole row of people facing me in the compartment disappeared. Down into the ground, it seemed. It was said the flyover made an 18-inch thick sandwich out of them all. As for me, when they cut me out a couple of hours later, I just walked back onto the platform out of the station and caught a Green Line bus home.
One moment of human error compounded by circumstance and coincidence into disaster. If it happens to trains and aeroplanes and in coal mines, in chemical plants and in steelworks, then why shouldn't it also happen to a nuclear reactor?
Murphy's Law number one. If something can go wrong, sooner or later, it will go wrong.
Murphy's Law number two. When things go wrong anywhere, they go wrong everywhere.
Is that you, Gordon? You're late.
The train was late. Points failure at Hither Green. We can split the atom and reach the moon, but I'm forced to travel home on a shoestring railway system that's falling apart at its seams.
Lack of government investment, Dad.
Oh, hello, Roxy. When did you get back?
I came down with the milk and papers. We finished recording at 4 o'clock this morning.
Oh, darling, Dave Ridgway called from the airport before he left to thank for the weekend. He said to light a firework under you. Well, a stick of firecracker up your old man's backside was the exact phrase, I think. He said to tell you time's running out.
You tell him next time he calls that your old man likes peace and quiet when he comes home in the evening.
Well, what was all that about?
Poor Daddy. He's tired.
He's frazzled.
You're being ridiculous, Gordon Aylan. You didn't even pour Mary a drink. You can hardly slink back into the kitchen now and pour her one. Why didn't you talk to them? Ask Roxy about the studio. Tell them the train stopped at a signal under the Nunhead flyover tonight. Tell them you saw ghosts, past and future. And that is something like a triple gin you've poured yourself. Old man. Come on out of the bag, you black monster. I should have had you shredded and burnt long ago. The fast breeder is not the 4:56 p.m. out of Cannon Street, nor Turkish Airlines DC-10 flight TK-981 out of Paris Orly. Neither is it Flixborough, Cerveza, or Apavan.
But it could be Kishtim. Muff. Page 13, footnote B. Kishtim, USSR, late 1957, precise date unknown. Stored radioactive waste material overheats and explodes, contaminating a highly populated area of the Urals. Thousands of victims die almost immediately from radiation sickness. Many more thousands die and no doubt continue to die from various forms of cancer. Every village in the area has been razed to the ground and 1,500 square kilometers declared permanently uninhabitable. Over the years, evidence of this disaster is gathered by the American CIA, but the evidence is withheld from the public in the West to avoid undermining faith in their own nuclear industry.
Have a good meal, Kate?
The French had us nicely separated at opposite ends of the table.
I've come to socialize with the Italians before we're whisked away to a hotel.
Mr. Ridgway.
Ah, Mr. Gianni. My congratulations. That's one hell of a reactor.
Do you have 2 moments for a technical puzzle?
Of course. Excuse me, Kate.
Sure.
Instrument graphs.
Sound sensor.
Yeah, with some noises on it.
We have no idea what they are.
Is this one of your experimental sensors under the core?
Yes.
That could be a sound pattern off one of the pumps.
So irregular.
Yeah?
It started as a single sound, and then a double signal, now a treble signal.
And you think there might be something in there floating around?
Well, I hope not.
Well, if there is something in there, it's obviously too big to go through the grid into the core, and it's obviously too small to interfere with the flow of sodium, or you'd have an indication on one of the flow meters.
So nothing to worry about, then?
You'll probably find next time you shut down and turn off the pumps, whatever it is disappears. Sink to the bottom and stay there. And in 30 years' time, when the reactor's dismantled, they'll find that one of the construction engineers dropped his plumb line. The disadvantage of too much peripheral instrumentation, Mr. Gianni, peripheral mysteries. Now, if I was running your outfit, I wouldn't be worrying about anything inside your plant. I'd be watching the lunatics on the outside.
Via San Vittore, the bar on the corner by the tram stop at midnight. Stand at the left corner of the bar and wait. That's what the man said. Geez, there are some rough-looking customers in here. Ah, someone's behind you, buddy boy.
There is a van waiting in the side street. Give me your bag, go out, and get in the bag.
My passport and money are in this bag.
When you get inside, take off all your clothes.
My clothes?
All your clothes. Then hand them out through the door.
He said all your clothes.
Who's that? Do you have a light?
There's a blanket on the floor. And a bottle if you need a pee-pee.
Where are we going?
You drive around. Make sure there's no one with you. Make sure you don't know where you are anymore.
Where do my clothes go?
They go in another direction. Make sure you have nothing inside them that could tell someone else where you are.
Are you Anna?
Why have you come? You tell me you want me to tell you about Segre. You want to put a bomb there?
No.
You do not believe in violence?
No.
If you not sit down, you will fall down.
I can't see anything while you shine that light in my eyes.
Come under the blanket with me, and I'll lend you the torch. Why are men always so frightened of their nakedness?
Kate?
It's open.
Nightcap?
Depends what I'd be letting myself in for.
Bourbon. The one aphrodisiac guaranteed to put me to sleep before it takes effect. One tooth mug without false teeth. Am I allowed to sit on your bed?
Short of screaming, I don't suppose I can stop you. I think you picked the wrong woman. I'm not much good at all this sort of thing.
Faithful to your fella?
You make it sound unnatural.
Well, I know I wasn't born monogamous. Such a waste. Who is your fella?
If I asked you that question, you wouldn't like it.
I don't mind. Pat's my fella. Big golden girl, glowing with lazy health, teaches Spanish at Berkeley and refuses to follow me to Washington.
So you're allowed to be ambitious and Pat isn't?
Are you ambitious?
You mean, why aren't I married with kids?
You're twisting my words. I was not trying to be a chauvinist asshole.
Well, I have two sisters, and they're both married. One's happy, one's unhappy. I thought that was enough for one family.
Are they both as beautiful as you?
They are beautiful. I have a very clear picture of myself, and it doesn't live up to your flattery.
Oh, it's impossible to have a clear picture of oneself. I always thought I was Paul Newman. Figure that out.
Blue eyes.
And curly hair. That's about all. Does that mean you like blue eyes?
I go for the father figure.
Paul Newman is a daddy. Didn't anyone tell you?
What was the technical puzzle this evening?
Technical puzzle?
Mr. Gianni. He took you aside in a huddle with a sheet of graph paper.
Trouble with his car.
Graph paper?
Burning too much gas.
You could talk your way out of anything.
I'm trying to talk my way in at the moment. But instead, you lovely apparition, I shall honorably retreat and see you in the morning. I'll bet you're not really sure you want me to go.
See you in the morning, Dave.
Thursday morning, 8:52. During the night, power output at the Segre reactor has risen as programmed to 392 megawatts. Sodium temperature has stabilized at 488 centigrade degrees. In the world outside, the wind direction has veered to west-southwest, force 3 increasing, an observation only relevant for the moment to one man in the control room, the shift controller. He looks up at the exterior monitor screen. An ominous blackness over the sea and cypress trees on the hillside swaying out of unison as though the wind was gusting. Thursday morning, 8:52 and 9 seconds.
Look at that wind. No bloody fishing for me tonight, Peepo.
In the same monitor screen, Enzo can see a car halted at the checkpoint on the hill, a guard dog straining at its leash, security guards turning out of the wind as they examine identification papers.
Stand to attention, lads. Big white chief's arrived.
Big white chief?
Our American visitor is at the gate.
If he doesn't mind, I'm going for a pee.
I'll do one for me.
...8:52 and 33 seconds. Deep in the reactor bowl, the bullet-shaped fragment of ceramic impacts for the last time, shattering along its fracture lines into 6 splinters. The countdown of events is now measurable only in thousandths of a second, a passage of time almost meaningless to a human. All 6 splinters feed through adjacent apertures in the grid, carried at great speed by the upward thrust of the sodium as it is pumped into the core to extract the heat from the fuel rods. 5 of the 6 splinters enter the same fuel assembly, each into a separate cooling channel. On the clock in the control room, it is still 8:52 and 33 seconds, with no sign yet that anything is wrong. At the top of the fuel assembly, each cooling channel feeds into a single steel neck. The 2 largest splinters jam sideways in this neck, the other 3 splinters piling up behind them. The flow of cooling sodium through the fuel assembly is throttled, cut by 80%. Pressure and heat building up so quickly that by the time the control room clock moves on to 8:52 and 34 seconds, the sodium is already boiling at 990 centigrade degrees around each fuel pin inside the affected assembly. But there is not yet sufficient flow of this overheated sodium past the blockage to activate the temperature monitor above the assembly that would trigger an automatic scram shutdown. 1 of the overheated fuel pins distorts, its steel sheath splitting. and the carefully contrived safe pattern of fuel pellets jumbling into lethal proximity. Still 8:52 and 34 seconds on the control room clock. Each man in the building feels the shockwave of an explosion deep in the reactor bowl. The explosion at last triggers scram shutdown. But the shutdown confirmation lights do not materialize on the control panels. It is with the fumbling urgency of an occasional nightmare that Enzo hits the manual scram button. For all the effect that has, he might just as well have banged the sides of his chair. The excursion, a miniature nuclear explosion, has disturbed the precise geometry of the fuel core. 17 of the 19 control rods are distorted out of alignment, jammed in their guide channels. The two control rods that do drop into the core are not sufficient to absorb the now rampant neutrons that ricochet like drunken children at wild angles through the fuel assemblies. The reactor is out of control.
In part four of Maximum Credible Accident by John Howlett, Gordon Aylan was played by Hugh Dixon, Kate by Patricia Gallimore, and the voice of Muff by Hayden Jones. Dr. Martin, Michael N. Harbour, the permanent undersecretary, Anthony Benson, Dave Ridgway, Blaine Fairman, Audish, Mark Woolgar, Ainsow, Terry Malloy, and Johnny, Nigel Lambert. Mary, Patricia Gibson, Henshaw, Kerry Shale, Roxy, Kim Durham, Anna, Anna Lindup, Helen, Heather Barrett, and Donachie, Graham Patton. The theme music was composed by Robert Campbell and Michael Shepherd. The serial was directed in our Birmingham studios by Roger Pine.